2017 convention season. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not yet a KBOO member, go to our website, kboo.fm, and join now. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Join us on Saturday, March 25th for an Archives Database Edit-a-thon and party. This event will run from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. We are recruiting current and past KBOO volunteers and listeners who hold knowledge of KBOO's 49-year history, and we are recruiting archivists, librarians, and any other person that enjoys information seeking and data entry to document this collective knowledge. This event is free and open to the public, but we need you to register so we can plan for the event. Find out more by emailing archive@kboo.fm or online at kboo.fm/editparty2017.
Tune into KBOO Wednesday, March 8th for International Women's Day.
We'll be celebrating all day long with special programming focusing on feminism, intersectionality,
and women in jazz, reggae, punk, and metal,
and so much more. That's International Women's Day. 24 hours of programming by women-identified folks for you.
Here at your community radio station,
KBOO Portland.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up at 9 on Pacific Underground, a discussion on the myth and stigma around mental health issues. At 10, Air Cascadia features headlines, interviews, and commentary with your host, Chris Andre. And Flash, followed by Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, a Radio Geekly debriefs on their experience at Wizard World Comic Con and forecasts the upcoming 2017 convention season. And thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Those who have not yet, who have so far failed to become members of the KBOO Foundation, you can do so at the extent and to in the way that makes sense to you at kboo.fm. Click where it says donate.
Hey, good morning. You're listening to Pacific Underground right here on KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Jenny Yokoyama, one of your hosts for today. I am joined with Tabitha Teo, Kanan Schlesinger, and special guests today, rapper Jason Chu. Today, we're going to be talking about mental health. We're going to be sharing some personal stories. We're going to be talking about self-care and the complexity that just is well, I guess this term mental health and the mental health system here in the United States, it's a mess. Just to put my two cents in there. A little bit, because why not? We're here to, you know, share stories and be real and everything. So first, let's introduce our special guest today, our special guest host, rapper Jason Chu. Welcome to the show, Daisy.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for having me, yo.
Yeah, Jason's here all the way from the mystical land of Los Angeles.
It's not that mystic. It's the opposite of that, sadly.
Well, you know, here in Portland, they say everybody is actually from California, so it's just like, welcome home. Welcome to your second home, Portland.
It's nice. It's like LA, but with nature.
Exactly. As the one that's actually from Oregon, you can all go home.
Yeah, that's one thing we always give to Tabitha. She's always allowed to say, oh, you Californians are so obnoxious. That's true. Like 3 out of 4 of us in the studio right now are Californians.
Yeah, we're losing a lot of people already, I'm sure. Like, oh, God.
Like, this is not what I tune into community radio for.
Yeah. Thanks, Tabitha, for welcoming us.
Yeah. I guess you're the good ones. You can stay.
Yes. I mean, well, Oregon's so white, so we need more POC, out-of-state POCers to come move here.
Right.
Yes. Well, so, Jason, mm-hmm. you're here in town, just like you're not actually on a tour or anything.
That's right.
You're breaking some time from your vacation, so we really appreciate
you
coming here.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, I'm honored. Yo, I mean, I was on Wikipedia last night. This is definitely a community institution.
Oh,
as told by the world's only credible encyclopedia. So no, I'm real honored to be with y'all this morning.
And next year will be the 50th anniversary of KBOO.
Hey.
I've actually never looked at KBOO's Wikipedia page.
Well, yeah, I feel bad. I haven't either. I'm like, what? There's a Wikipedia page?
I know. About it's that. Like, there's a Wikipedia
page. It's incredibly factual.
I'm sure it is.
It's strongly factual.
I will add some facts to it later.
I trust everything cited.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
It's on the internet. Format. Of course it's true.
It's one of those things that does definitely make you question your thinking. So getting on that topic of mental health, just to bring it back to what the show today is about.
Good segue.
Yeah, right. I know. I'm professional at this. So Jason, you have a song on your latest album, Arrivals, that's called A Love Song. And we want to talk about that because, you know, it is a song that even though it's called A Love Song, it is about mental health. Can you talk a little bit about that song?
That's right. No. So the album, it's called Arrivals. It's out now on Spotify and Pandora and YouTube and Tidal and all that. And the idea behind the project was it's 10 songs, and each song like starts a conversation. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm very much rooted in the like activist and nonprofit and impact world. And so I don't just want to be making things to sound pleasant, you know? And so for me, a love song, I wrote this song because I feel like love gets a very, very weird a connotation in our society, right? Like we think about love only as, usually when you hear like a love song, it's like, oh, that's going to be either a song about sex, straight up.
Like or a romantic song or romantic
exactly,
love.
Exactly, yeah. Right? Or it's going to be this very well-worn trope of what romance looks like. Mm-hmm. And for me, the point of the song is to say that love doesn't always look like that. And learning to love doesn't always look like getting to be with a partner and so on.
So we have a clip of the song here. And the version that you're about to hear now is the version that is your music video, which right. you have some like interviews of people speaking about their relationships.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit, maybe just like real, because we got to get to that clip, but why you decided to put in these personal interviews that you're going to hear in this upcoming clip?
Right. Well, because for us, the whole idea was, you know, for me, I never just try to tell only my story as though that's the whole picture, right? I wanted to represent as many voices. So you see, you know, we've got white ladies, we've got, you know, black dudes, we've got like a variety of diverse voices all talking about their experience of love. And yes, it fits a similar flow, but it's definitely just representing the fact that love can exist from different perspectives, normalizing diversity. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Let's have a listen to that right now.
Back of time when we're talking, I'm all in, no stalling. So please don't be rough, it's not a bluff. When I say I'm falling in love with us, all in, no stalling. You showed me that love is not a buzz that I feel, but the care that I give off.
She said, I realized I messed up. My response to that was, it's no hard feelings. You know, I just want the best for you.
My doc just died. And I was like waiting and waiting for him to answer. And all that came back was like, oh, okay.
There was a party going on and I wanted him to come. And actually, I do remember I sent him a text that day and then I got a text back saying that he had passed away from another friend and that it had happened that morning. And I was shocked.
Couldn't commit. I tried to push it, said I'd move anywhere that you went. And we both knew that I could give all I have, and you could take it. But it takes two to relate. You turned your back, I had to face it. I'm not mad, I just grieve that we lost what we could have. We played childish games, now we can't take it back. All the things that I said, the gifts you and I sent, all the photographs that we took are now just files in my trash. But you showed me what love is, that's the memory that I kept. How I put my arms around you as we sat there on those steps. That was love in the air as we shared about our past. And the love I gave to you is not love that I'll never get back. So this love song is not for you, it's because of you. You're not the last or the best, but you're the only one of you. And I thank you, I have to, for the time that we spent. You showed me that love grows, even if you give and never get it back.
Learn patience. I mean, look into her instead of at her.
I would, like, honestly look for someone who actually cares about me as much as I care about him.
I live my life so hard, and I have the most amazing life. I have an amazing husband, and I always spread love, always. And that's something that I'm so proud of, and that's something that they gave me.
Wow, that's some powerful stuff.
Thank you. I definitely empathize with a lot of it.
Yeah, when I first heard that song, I was like, oh, this is a love song. And then by the end, I was like, that gave me the feels, you guys. Like, I don't know, just the complexity of the story that you present there, you know, that, and it's not just a breakup song, you know, it's not just about, oh, I'm sad and I miss you. It's so much about the complexity within ourselves that we go through when it comes to, like, relationships and love.
So. And exactly, and it really came because honestly, so all of my verses, it was all honest. It's all true. That all really happened to me. And it was me. I started writing this song actually when I started I met this girl and I started talking to her. That was the first verse. And then I wrote two verses and then we stopped talking. And so for me, this song was actually personally me working that through, you know, through the mediums that are available to me. You know, the mediums of art, and choosing to take that processing public. Because I feel like, right, there's so many of us that we only put it public once it's nicely packaged. Mm-hmm. Right? It's like, oh, we wound up together. Or, oh, she left, but it's a breakup. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to put something out that leaves it raw. Because to me, right, if we're talking about mental health, that's what so much of our community lacks, is feeling like it's okay to process publicly, or it's okay to put yourself out there when you're not fully, completely polished and done.
Yeah. Exactly. Would you like to introduce our guest that we got coming up here, Tabitha?
Okay, sure. So our next segment is with V. Would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Sure. My name is V. I am currently pursuing my master's in social work, so I'm currently in the fields right now. With a priority in learning how to provide appropriate mental health and behavioral health intervention across cultures. I'm also a first and a half generation immigrant from Vietnam.
Awesome. How did you hear about Pacific Underground?
Through friends, Kanan specifically.
Yeah, drawing people in.
Yeah.
What have been your experiences with the mental health professions of color?
Well, I think nationwide there's a lack of counselors of color, but specifically noticing this very much so in Portland since moving here. I also think, you know, being in the fields studying social work, I've noticed an inadequate amount of training around diversity and around providing culturally appropriate and responsive interventions and treatment, which I find extremely problematic. And I also have personal experience in, you know, with white counselors and having them kind of not be aware of, you know, certain things of coming from an immigrant family and the different kind of issues you would have with that.
How do you feel about our approach to our current approach to mental wellness and health?
Well, I think it's different cross cultures. I think definitely there's stigma, no matter what culture that you identify with. But I think it's funny that there's so much stigma around mental health and not as much stigma around like certain medical conditions. Like I was talking to Kanan yesterday saying how I would probably feel more comfortable telling my parents that I have cancer rather than saying, hey dad, I suffer with depression and anxiety, which, yeah. And I'm sure like most people have that experience with their families, whether, you know, they're immigrants or not, but I find it particularly difficult to even explain to my dad what that means and what that's like for me.
Yeah. I was diagnosed with depression like 10 years ago. And when I first like sort of figured it out, I was like, oh man, how am I going to tell my parents that I need help? Right? Such a hard conversation to have.
So my dad found out because he eventually got his like end of the year insurance bill statement that I'd been seeing a counselor for like months and months, and called me on the phone being like, what's wrong?
Is everything okay? So do your parents, after that conversation, do your parents now understand your experience or understand what you're going through? Or is it still a hard conversation to have with them?
It's still a hard conversation. Honestly, when my parents ask me how I'm doing, I usually just say, I'm fine. School's fine. Work's fine. I'm eating. I'm healthy. I'm alive. And it's really hard for me to this day to be honest with how I'm feeling and the stuff I'm going through in my personal life. In their lifetimes compared to me and what I've gone through. And currently, too, they just have really hard lives. And so it kind of feels like I'm burdening them with what I'm going through mentally, and it almost feels petty. So there's like kind of that aspect to it too.
But you don't want to like invalidate your own experience though. So, I mean, yeah, your parents may have gone through some things, but you're also going through your own thing, and it's just a different experience though. So I mean, I'm supposed to be interviewing you, but I don't think you should invalidate your own experience and downplay it. So.
And I completely agree with you, and I completely agree with that. And there's like the part of me that understands that logically, and then there's the other part of me that, you know, just feels like I just can't do this to them.
Do you think that might also be part of your... I'm not sure what a good word, but I kind of want to say like mental divide that might be related to your mental health. That's like this is the objective truth versus like your subjective truth of like what you're experiencing.
Yes. I mean, 100%. I think, especially when it comes to sharing these things with my parents, I feel like we're operating on under such different paradigms and understandings of what health is, that like, I guess when I'm trying to communicate to them objectively, like I am healthy physically and, you know, it's definitely hard in sharing kind of what I'm going through internally with them.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all that.
Can I just ask a quick question?
Yes.
Okay. Have you you know, I have that same experience with parents of just like, I'm not quite sure how we talk about this in a way that is like genuine. I do the lot of like, oh yeah, I'm fine, everything's great. But slowly over the years, I'm trying to find some kind of honest dialogue. It's not 100% authentic. I'm just wondering, as someone who, you know, has been thinking about this and has studied this, have you been able to find any sort of way to maybe find inroads into talking a little bit? We only got a little bit of time, but so I'm asking like this huge question. But yeah, do you have any sort of feeling like you're having little inroads with your parents at all?
Actually, well, the one thing that I thought of when you asked that question was the election. And I feel like the election has really been able to help me and open kind of this dialogue with my parents. Like the day after the election, I called my mom crying, which I never do that. And I was able to finally just say all of these things that have been bothering me and have an honest and real kind of discussion with her.
I feel like that's a story I've been hearing quite a bit. So if the elections did anything, maybe it helped at least open some dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
One positive.
Yeah, I've never actually had many like really negative discussions with my father, but finally we had like discussions about like how stressful the elections were and just like our culture and how that like places stress upon each of us. And it was like probably one of the first times we've had that dialogue. But yeah, but it wasn't anything personal like about our lives. It's just like, okay, let's talk generally about the elections. But it was a surprising conversation to definitely have. Well, thank you, V, very much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So yeah, coming up next, we'll have some more guests and we'll be talking also about self-care.
Hey, y'all listening to K-Boo. My name is Jason Chu at Jason Chu Music. It's great y'all joining us for Pacific Underground.
Welcome back. I am sitting here with Elena. Elena, how are you doing today?
I'm pretty good.
Thanks for coming on into Pacific Underground this morning.
Thanks for having me.
So you were talking about mental health today. And Elena, do you want to introduce yourself a little bit and tell us a little about yourself?
Sure. My name's Elena. I live in Portland. I've been here for a few years. I don't really know what to say about myself. I really like talking about mental health and self-care, and I'm pretty open about my own journey with it all. So, yeah, happy to be here.
So you talk pretty openly and freely about your experience with, like, PTSD. Do you want to talk a little bit about your experience, I guess, maybe, like, with dealing with it and how you've come to be open about talking about it, actually?
Sure. Yeah. I think it has been. It's something that's happened over time. My comfort level with like being really honest about my struggle with anxiety and depression and PTSD. I think for me, I you know, I struggled with a lot of this as a kid, but I didn't necessarily have the words or the framework to talk about it or even know what was happening. I was, you know, because I think when these things start when you're really young, I would say my depression started when I was, you know, around 10 years old. I kind of thought, well, I guess this is just normal. I guess this is, I didn't know, you know, I didn't have the words to say what was going on for me. And I kind of felt like it was my fault, I think. So it wasn't until I was, you know, into my 20s, I think, that I really started understanding what was going on for me. And that made it a lot easier to talk about, because once I had a kind of framework, then I could explain it to others. And so since that's happened, I think more and more as I have more understanding, I want to talk to about it more and more with other people, because I think that's really healing. I think it's really important for us all to try to be honest about our journey, because I think, as you were saying earlier, it is like an ongoing process. It's not like, you know, you have treatment and then you're better. It's kind of like, you know, I think as we all know, it's a day-to-day struggle. And of course, you know, I definitely went through periods where I feared, you know, judgment and that people would judge me. I feared the stigma. I thought people would, if I opened up about any of this, people would blame me or shame me or feel like I was making excuses for my life. So I think it is hard to kind of open up and be vulnerable, but for me, it's really worth it. there's been a payoff in that. I think one of the big things for me is that something that helps my mental health a lot is getting empathy and understanding. So I think once you can talk about it, that's the only way you can get those things.
And I just kind of wonder, when did you sort of feel like, okay, I need to go beyond just blaming myself or all those excuses that, you know, we all tend to make for ourselves? You know, when did that go from being like, okay, I need to start reaching out and figuring out what this is?
I think that started maybe as an adult, like in my mid-20s, honestly. It wasn't until then that I kind of realized, I think maybe trying to be like in a close, like romantic relationship, I realized like, I think that level of like closeness with someone was something where I realized, oh, I'm not really okay. Like I'm really struggling. Like letting someone in that close made me realize, oh, not everyone is like this. It was kind of like this wake up call. Like not everyone is like, you know, struggling this hard, like crying every day. Not everyone is dealing with this. And so I think that encouraged me to sort of like talk to a professional, which, as V was saying, it can be really hard to find someone that, you know, fits with your cultural background and kind of understands your experience. But I think once I did that and once I started reading on my own and talking to people, I started to understand like the cultural context of what was happening to me and how so much of it comes from things that are in our world, like sexism, like traumas that have happened to me, family stuff, some family dysfunction, substance abuse in my family. And once you sort of start to get that wider context, I think it takes away maybe some of that self-blame when you can realize like these are problems that are facing our whole society. These are things that we need to be talking about. Like this isn't just mine to deal with and mine to keep to myself and fix internally, which I think is the message that I got as a kid. And maybe that brings in some of like the Asian family dynamic as of like, you know, not wanting to bring shame, not wanting to ruin the family happiness is what I always had. I was like, oh, I need to like deal with this on myself because I don't want to, like ruin that family happiness, be like a bad daughter.
You know, you said a little earlier that you realized that to be open brought empathy towards you.
Yeah.
And it also sounds like becoming open brought a lot of empathy towards yourself and like compassion for your own situation of just, like, okay, it's okay. Like, I'm not trying to, I know for at least for myself, there was a lot of that same feeling of like, I don't want to bring shame, or as in Japanese culture, they often say like, don't lose face.
Yes.
And I was always worried about losing face, right? Oh my gosh. And then at some point it was just like, wait, that's like, what kind of logical thinking is that? Something that right. like keeping everything inside and crying and all stuff and being angry. Mm-hmm. Like, how is this keeping anyone's face where it is?
Right. Yeah. That's like, it's not exactly helping work through anything or heal anything to keep it inside. But it's really hard when we're sort of trained that way and we're trained to kind of feel like guilty or ashamed of our struggle. And it's still like hard for me, I think, to talk to my parents about some of this stuff, because I think, you know, I want to have an understanding of like my past and how I came to be this way, but it can be hard to talk to them without, you know, them starting to feel like they're like maybe even blaming them or shaming them or saying like something should have been different in my childhood, which I'm not necessarily trying to say.
I have a question about your parents. Do they react the same, like your mother versus your father? Or because I noticed in my own personal life that my mother is more comfortable speaking to me than like my father is, and it has so much to do with their own interpretations of themselves and whatever. Mm-hmm. But is there a difference, or are your parents kind of like united?
There is a difference. And it's interesting. I think my experience is also interesting because my dad's white and my mom's Chinese. And there's like a male female, you know, difference. But I think it's hard with both of them in different ways. With my mom, I know that she struggled herself with some things and some mental illness, but she doesn't really open up about it or talk about it. So I think I end up hitting a little bit of a wall. And I feel like from an early age, I felt like her way of being is like, don't talk about it really. Like, don't just like your feelings. I felt like there was some like, you know, just it's not valid to feel like you have a great life. You should be happy. Mm-hmm. Like talking about like anything that was like negative feelings wasn't really valid because like you have a great life. Yes, like we live in this great country. You have a great life. You know, you should, like, I'm doing all the things to give you a great life. You should be happy. So, like, I feel like I still hit that wall with her, even though I'm like, haven't you struggled with some of this too? So I'm still working on that. And with my dad, it's similar. I mean, I think he tries to have empathy and understanding. And it's been enough years that we've, like, you know, tried to talk about this that I think they're getting better and better, and it's helping me, like talking through things with them is helping me set boundaries, I think, with them too, that have allowed me to get healthier, because I think there's just setting boundaries is a really good thing with mental health. So
I'm gonna completely agree with that.
Yeah,
it's a healthy thing to understand where you're at and what your capacity is and what everybody's capacity around you is, especially with parents, because there's just it's so complex, that relationship,
long history.
Well, thank you, Elena, so much for coming in and sharing your story. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, next we have a quick interview with Teresa Nguyen, who was interviewed by Tabitha to talk about self-care. Tabitha, you want to give us a quick intro about this?
So I think one aspect of mental wellness is self-care. And I know it sounds so new agey and self-care. But I think it's also really important, that's valid, that you just need to take some time, step away from things, just take some time for yourself. And I had a very good interview with an activist in Portland to talk about those things.
Okay, well, so apparently that's not the interview with Teresa Nguyen, and we're loading that up right now for you. But in the meantime, we still have Elena in studio with us, and we're going to talk a little bit actually about self-care. So Jason, what do you do for self-care as someone who's constantly on the road and having to, you know, express your and share your inner self as an artist? What do you do for self-care?
Yeah, man, that's a great question. I buy clothes. I mean, you know, it's I've been learning because as you mentioned, like so many of us, we're not taught self-care. So it's been very ad hoc. You know, I've been realizing just reverse engineering it, realizing, okay, you know, if I spend an afternoon doing this, that makes me feel, I feel like there's no template, right? There's no formula.
Mm-hmm.
It's more just observing and doing those science experiments, you know, like, oh, when I sleep more than 8 hours, I don't hate people, you know?
Yeah. Know thyself.
Yeah, exactly. But I do buy clothes on the internet.
There's no shame in that. It's okay. It's actually something that Kanan and I love to talk about. It's like, oh, I was feeling sad. Did you go buy pants to take away that sadness? And we agree that buying pants actually does help sometimes when you're feeling sad. But it looks like we got the interview finally from Roland. So here's Teresa Nguyen.
So when?
You get it.
Okay. Asian linguistics are sometimes very tricky.
Yes.
But please tell me about yourself. What do you do?
So I'm primarily known as a community grassroots organizer. So I'm pretty much all over the place. I work with Sankofa Northwest for their queer youth program and do a lot of queer youth statewide events. I work with a lot of communities of color. I work with APANO, Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon. I'm also part of Asians for Black Lives PDX. And I also work a lot with the Q Center and queer and trans folks of color within that community.
Excellent. Sounds like you're very busy.
Yes.
What have been your experiences with mental health? I'm sure doing all this activism work definitely stresses you out sometimes.
Totally. I mean, you can't organize without taking mental health into consideration. I would say that yes, being very busy also equals being very tired. And as someone who waffles between depression and anxiety, I have to take just like a few extra steps to think about my self-care and plan ahead for like future me. Like what would be doing future me a favor right now? Eating, having a water, taking a few minutes to just sit down, planning out even just like an hour of time where I know I'm doing absolutely nothing between all of these events so that I can reset with like low to like no stimulation for a second. And then I'm able to start again. So like my work threshold's pretty high.
What do you do to cope with all the stresses of organizing and your activism work?
Dance parties. Dance parties are a big one. There was an article on Black Girl Dangerous that I was reading. It was one of the newer ones that was focusing on a podcast, and I think one of the co-authors, Carmen Leah Asensio, and it was talking about how just movement, maybe not necessarily like an intentional dance, but just any kind of movement activates neurons in a bunch of different ways, and that kind of takes you out of your headspace, because the thing with organizing and the thing with doing activist work is that you're constantly, your brain is constantly going at like 1,000 miles per hour, and sometimes your brain is just kind of like stuck there, you're in thought mode, and that's it, and so movement helps quite a bit, actually. Also cooking, like I'm very big on cooking.
I know since the inauguration, I've been re-engaging in a lot of music. And some of my friends and I have been talking about organizing like a music video dance party.
I think that sounds amazing. I've actually been doing a lot of karaoke recently. I actually went twice in a week, which is the most in any sort of concentrated amount of time, because like I'm like such kind of a karaoke snub queen for myself, because I am just like, I don't sing in front of other people. And then next thing I know, I am like pulling out Dean Martin's Sway at Voice Box for a friend's like send off.
Is that one of the things you do for your self-care?
It's one of the newer things that I do for self-care. And so I find that because I'm a creature of habit and I'm a creature of routine, and knowing that there is a certain predictable formula to when I just go about my day, whether I'm going to my day job or I'm going to go and do organizing, I need something kind of predictable to help me through. But then after a while, that predictability just kind of leaves me in a little bit of a rut. And so something that would be considered like a refresher would be something like karaoke, which is recently, because it's just it still feels very new and very out of my element and very like non sequitur, because you're just accessing another part of your persona that has always been there, but you're just kind of letting that persona out to play, which I think is really important, especially if you're doing work that is important and can also be emotionally taxing at the same time.
If you could fix our healthcare system, specifically our mental healthcare system, what would you do? Because I'm sure in your work and maybe in your own life, you've experienced barriers to accessing the care that you need or that people need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gosh, that's such a broad question. A of all, because like there are a lot of policy details around the healthcare system that like I don't fully understand. As far as firsthand experience goes, like definitely with trying to find adequate, comprehensive, basically care that doesn't treat me like a stranger or some kind of weirdo for intentionally identifying as non-binary and looking for non-binary specific healthcare and things like that. And, you know, not having, the nature of my health so tied into my external presentation as femme and being read as like quote unquote female. So I know that that's been trying to find healthcare that fits that. And there are a few places like Equi Center, which is really great. It's a queer and trans inclusive healthcare. And so that's made me feel really at home, at least speaking for myself. I know that there have been really necessary movements like the Trans ID Pop-Up Clinic, Trans Assistant Project, TAP.
Can you tell me about that? I haven't heard about this.
Yeah, so I was part of one of the Trans ID Pop-Up Clinics, and what that is a full comprehensive, care day. Is kind of how I would put it. But what goes into that is there are lawyers who are donating their time pro bono to talk about what it would take to do legal name change, gender change, all of that paperwork. There were folks from the Trans Assistance Project to help you get funds if you were low on resources and experiencing financial access, to go through all the hoops it takes just to like change on paperwork how you truly identify, you know. And there were lines to set up for doctor's appointments if you needed to speak with a medical professional about something, or if you needed to seek therapy, if you needed to seek like all of these things. And this whole setup was arranged at the Q Center. So there were just various stations for folks to come into, and they could eat snacks while they waited, and just got a full spectrum service addressing their needs, which was super amazing. And so trans competent healthcare is super important. Like, that's what I would want to have addressed. As a person of color, like, I know that there are definitely culturally specific nuances in healthcare, and that is something that I am also still learning about, because I, for myself, I'm more so focused on, you know, queer competent healthcare. You know, when I go in, like, I just want to go in and like figure out what the solution is to get on my path to wellness. Like, I'm not really interested in anything else around that, at least for the time being. But yeah, culturally competent healthcare as well. Like when you're coming in with folks of color who have traditions or ways of navigating healing, and that healing for them is very valid, and that is their truth. Like, I would love to have a healthcare system where there are more doctors that support what the patient's needs are around that, versus like the Western medicine knows best sort of ethos approach, which is gross.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Yes, of course.
Is there anything else you want to talk about?
I guess, I mean, other than like mental health and finding spaces that, you know, meet your very specific needs, because like you are the one who knows your body best, you know your health best, you know you best. I think in addition to that, you know, if you also happen to be a busy bee like myself, I would definitely say like intentionally carve out downtime, intentionally carve out playtime and do things like that, because like the work is always going to be there. And so I think it's just super important to know that if, you know, your anxiety could be through the roof, you're just having a blah day, or your brain is just absolutely like just a hard no for the day, like that doesn't make you less worthy. And that's something that I have to constantly remind myself about and have to constantly work at, is that like you are not worth what you produce. Anti-capitalist love notes. Thanks, memes. So just things like that to keep in mind. And that's what always kind of circulates through my brain. And so like whatever you're feeling, whatever you need to be doing to take care of yourself, like you don't owe anyone else an explanation for why that needs to happen. Just go do you. And if your community is there for you, they will be like, cool. Like what would be most helpful to you right now? Like that's magic.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for the advice. Mm-hmm. Thanks for making time for us.
Oh, sure. No, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So that was an interview that we recorded last week, right, Tabitha?
Yep, last week.
With Teresa Nguyen. And we kind of want to like take from that interview and carry on a conversation about self-care while we're all sitting around this wonderful octagon table. And we're going to have an octagon table discussion about self-care. For me personally, self-care can take so many different forms, right? It's not just like bubble baths and massages. For me, it can sometimes be like wanting to like break something or like play along to a power ballad on the drum set, or writing a really cathartic Facebook post where I'm just like angry at certain people of less pigment and or systems of oppression.
Okay, so like we're all doing stuff here. Anyway, I'm really surprised that Facebook post, that self-care for you? Because sometimes I feel
sometimes.
Like I do the catharsis thing and then it feels like, oh, maybe I just actually shot myself in the foot there because now there's comments and
Well, yeah, then you have to deal with the fallout. So maybe self-care with like a mind for like the ramifications. Also, sometimes I have someone from like my past, like far back in the past, who responds to one of my comments and they provide a very nice self-care moment because I get to take them down. in a public
okay,
forum.
Yeah, I get you on that one.
Yeah, yeah. I think I've shown you those conversations before. And that's like, that's really nice for me, but that's also not nice to do to someone else because it's not educational and it's not, ultimately not helpful in the long term. So anyway, yeah, I figured that we could like talk about like the importance of self-care or some examples of self-care that we find necessary. And before we go into that, V was just telling me about one way that she found to be helpful or maybe just possible to find a practitioner of color for mental health. So V, how if you are a person of color in Portland, what's one way of maybe landing a therapist of color?
So life hack, and this works in all places, not just Portland. You can actually go on psychologytoday.com and they have a search engine. You can put in your zip code. And then under, and I'm doing air quotes here, issues, you can actually check off racial identity. And
what?
It actually, you know, generates a lot of results for counselors of color. So there you go.
You heard it here first.
Wow. Yep.
That is so cool.
That's very interesting.
I'm going to go try it because I don't have myself one of those therapists of color.
What are those fancy new therapists of color? The upgraded therapist.
This is a trend. It'll never last.
That's a really interesting hack, though. That's something I feel like we could dedicate a whole nother show to. Like, what racial issues? Woo, man. I need a therapist just to talk about that, about the racial issue category. My goodness. But yeah, no, I feel like for me, when I first moved to Portland, I did grab a therapist who was a white person. And I didn't really think about how that would be maybe problematic, especially here in Portland, compared to like when I lived in California. It was definitely different. I don't want to go with, hey, all white people are racist sort of idea or whatever. But it was, you know, how the white people up here are different. And it was hard for me to deal with, because I was at first I thought it was like myself, because I would try to bring up quote unquote racial issues, which was just like me talking about my family and stuff. And there was so much of downplaying that, of just like, well, no, all of our experiences are universal. It's like, no, I really don't think you know what it means to be the nail that needs to be down in the board. Like, you don't really understand the subtlety to that. And it's like, oh, no, I understand, because I have low self-esteem. I'm just like, whoa.
Wait.
Yeah. And it's like, put me like in a place of hesitation of finding another therapist. So I will use that hack fee.
Yeah, that's so like dismissive of your experience. Elena, you're talking to me last night about like a therapist that like threw some microaggressive baloney at you.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I kind of went through the same process. The therapist I was seeing for a while here moved away like unexpectedly and recommended someone else that I go to. And we sort of had the first session and it was okay. I was like talking, like giving her my spiel about my history. And then let me see if I remember what happened. She, I think kind of out of nowhere, like I said something about my mom being Chinese and she was like, oh, I knew it. And she just like kind of caught me off and she was like, I knew it. And then she just like went off, like kind of cut me off and then went off about like, she was like, oh, you look so exotic.
No way.
Yes, out there that you look so, she's like, I knew it, you look so exotic. And then started talking about like the Chinese people she had known, like how her kids were like in some kind
this
of
is
Chinese
my,
immersion
it's
school.
Like,
and it was, I was just like, blown
this
away.
Is my therapy session. Why are we talking
yeah,
about
you?
You
ask for your money back. Yeah. Like, you do not get my payment here.
I kind of like, it was at the end of the session, so I didn't really like know what to say. And I remember just like going back to my car, like when I got back, like in my car, like writing to my friend right away about it, like, I don't know how to feel about this. I'm upset. Is that okay that I'm upset? And they were like, yes.
Oh, no.
So, you know, speaking of, like, yo, just being a loud Chinaman has been, like, my self-care.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, like, I feel like our, like, it's funny. Last night, I forget, my girlfriend were in town for the, like, a couple days. And we were just walking around. It was really nice. And we went to this really nice, like, local organic market. It was super nice. There were really nice people there. And this dude said some, like, microaggressive stuff. And I just turned up on him real quick in, like, the frozen food aisle.
Yes.
And that, for me, has been, like, self-care. Yeah. Is, like, giving myself
totally.
The permission.
Yes.
Right? And I get, like, I'm a straight, well-educated, you know, man. But at this, so in some ways, I'm already given permission to do that. But at the same time, like, I've just been finding a lot of joy in realizing that we're allowed.
Yeah.
To get mad, right?
Totally. And I didn't get to say anything to the therapist at the time, but I did definitely write her a long email afterwards. And that was like actually one of the first times where I like stood up for myself and I was like, hey. And I just laid it out. I didn't like put any blame on her. I was like, I don't think you did this on purpose. I don't think like you meant anything wrong by it, but like this is how it came across for me, and I explained it and I felt really good about that. And she wrote back like, oh, and she did apologize. I mean, she had the, you know, she apologized and said that she probably needed to go to some kind of cultural training. And I was like, yep. See you later.
Well,
go do
good.
That.
That's
thank
awesome.
You. Bye.
Wow.
You probably also saved a lot of future clients from experiencing the same thing.
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, I think that's why it's important to talk about these things, right? Yeah, and to share experiences. Because I think, like, if that had happened to me 5 years ago or even, like, 2 years ago or a year ago, I might have just, like, kept going to her and, like, been like, oh, you know, well, that wasn't a big deal. I used to brush off comments like that all the time. Like, you're so exotic, you know, or, you know, and now I'm like, that's not okay.
What led to the shift?
I think just, well, for one, like talking to more people of color about and like developing that community for myself, because I didn't necessarily have as much support of like a community of color other places that I've lived. And oddly enough, in Portland, I feel like I was, because it is so white, I've been driven to find more of a better support system in this, in that way.
So do you feel like you, that's been your experience, like now that you've sought out that support system and found some of it, like, do you feel a difference in your care?
Oh, yeah, because I feel like there's a, I have places where I can vent if these microaggressions happen. I don't have to, like, keep it in, or I don't have to, like, talk about it with white friends who, like, might dismiss it. I can, like, you know, just telling that little story to you guys, immediately you're like, oh, I get it. You're like, yes. And so that's so validating to just have people that understand and important.
Okay, can we talk about the how I actually kind of, okay, so first I was like, okay, my white therapist, so this is that one lady I had. But right now, I see a couples therapist with my partner, and our therapist is a white woman who, ever since the election, has now just turned into this poor person who has to sit there and listen to me vent, because she's like super, like, you know, awake, and she really gets what I'm talking about. And so sometimes I'll start off these sessions like, I know we're supposed to be talking about a relationship, but I need to talk about white ladies. And then, like, because, like, right after the woman's mark, I just, like, went off on her. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I don't mean to say that it's you, but it's just, it's people that look like you, and I'm really, really sorry. And she's like, no, get it out. And it was the most cathartic thing to be able to say these things of just, like, all these microaggressions that come at me, and they say this and they say that. And to be able to say it to a white person who was just like, yeah, that's terrible. Oh my God, that's racist. Instead of somebody who was just apologetic, turned into most cathartic thing. And so that's just, like, been our quote-unquote couples therapy sessions for the last, like, few weeks. Have just been like, we need to talk about white people and how this is stressful, because this is self-care time. I need to get this out. And so I will say that there is the benefit when you find somebody who, like, is understanding, where I'm just like, help me understand. No, I don't want you to understand. I just want to know you. And she just takes it, and I love it.
Hey, but my favorite Lauryn Hill lyric, right, is everything is everything. So who's not to say that talking about white ladies isn't improving your, like, connectivity to your partner?
That's
right?
True, right?
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, everything is interconnected.
It's true.
And when we, like, I'm realizing the more that I do with my racial stuff, the more that, like, other latent things come out. And then my partner and I wind up, like, just chilling more, because
that's true.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think that's true in our experience. And definitely, like, I also think it makes my care better with my therapist, because, like, it's something I'm not holding back anymore. It's not something that I'm like keeping to myself and being like, oh, well, you can't relate to me, blah, blah, blah. Like, I just sort of put it all out there one day and realized, like, oh, well, now I know how awake you are and how much more I can get out of this situation and, like, be honest with myself. So there can be benefits.
I think what's beautiful about that is that you took that experience of, like, being in the Women's March and, like, feeling awful, had a similar experience, and you turned it into fuel to, like, affect some sort of change and bring together community, because, like, what, a month later you held a, you organized with, like, your own money along with your sister, and you, like, had the 75th, like, I don't want to say anniversary because that makes it sound celebratory, but 75th commemoration of internment, and you brought a whole bunch of Japanese American folks
go
in Portland
yeah.
out of the woodwork, and you totally, like, seized on this moment, and you made it, like, way more self-care. So it's like, take that, white supremacy. Like, you're
yeah, my
you're
activism
just fueling
is cool.
me.
Yeah, activism
I'm the Hydra.
Is self-care.
My self-care is obsessing over chihuahuas.
And I dig it. I love that you have something that you love. Like, if anybody's ever met Tabitha, like, she's literally wearing a chihuahua sweater right now. She has a chihuahua handbag. And if you ever listen to our show, there's probably at least one chihuahua reference, like, per episode because of Tabitha. But it literally brings you joy. And I love that.
Yeah. When I was diagnosed with depression, was also the same time that my parents adopted these two little chihuahuas. And before then, like, I always thought chihuahuas, oh, they're small, annoying, barking rat dogs. But, oh, they're just so, like, they just want to cuddle with you. And they just love you so much. And they're so little. And I feel like, and it's like, oh, I just want to protect you because you're so small and pathetic. And I just find it so comforting that there's this tiny little creature that's just so devoted to you. It's like, oh, I love you.
Yeah, sometimes we just need something to protect. We need to feel like we're the guardians of something.
Yeah, I think, like, sometimes for self-care with that too, it's just like, it's nice to take the focus off of yourself and like doing that. I need to care for myself and then care for something else for a little bit to like put your energy someplace else and make you feel like you have a utility outside of just like caring for myself. I know definitely I feel that way with my dogs too, but I don't understand chihuahuas. They're just tiny. They're just tiny. Proud to you, chihuahuas.
You may change your opinion when one is trying to sleep inside your sweatshirt.
What? Wow. If that's what brings you joy, Tabitha, that's what I want for you.
That feels like a whole scenario that could be elucidated on.
Okay, we're running out of time. But we just want to thank everybody for joining us today with this issue of mental health, because it's so important. And you know, I just wanted to say, when we were like talking about this show, we realized, wow, we're like kind of lucky in the sense that we can talk about these things these days. I feel like maybe when we were all kids, there was like a, we don't talk about this. It's so taboo.
Yeah, remove the stigma.
Yeah. So thanks everybody for sharing your stories and stuff, because it's not easy. And removing the stigma of the API is not talking about the feels, because we got some validity, man. So Sam, want to take us out there? You've been listening to Pacific Underground. Make sure to tune into our next show next Wednesday on March 8th at 4 p.m. for a special Women's Day special episode. We'll be talking about what it means to be a woman in 2017. We'll be sharing stories about life in America from an API perspective, so tune in. In the meantime, check us out online at pacificunderground.org and on the socials at PAC Underground. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and SoundCloud. Real quick, Jason Chu, rapper Jason